Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Albert Breer, MMQB, with us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. This is unbelievable, Albert. You know, I shouldn't say it's unbelievable. That's a little dramatic. But surprising, Kevin Stefanski normally gives you no answers in these press conferences. When you ask about an injured guy, he says nothing, never talked about Odell, wouldn't give you a straight answer. And now all of a sudden on Wednesday, he doesn't even get asked about it. He just says flat out Odell not playing. What do you make of this? Does it any meaning to you or no? Like, is this him saving Odell from people knocking him for not playing or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's – I mean, look, like, we can all do the timeline, right? Like, so he was hurt at the end of October, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so we're talking about, like, 10.5 months now, right?
Yeah.
And it's easy to look at these injuries sometimes and compare one to the next where, like, look at Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow got hurt, I think, a month after Odell did, and, like, he's out there playing quarterback. He's out there every snap. Now, it's not the same thing playing quarterback and playing receiver, but there are plenty of examples of guys who come back off of ACLs when they're hurt at the end of the year. You know what I mean? And
right.
Odell was hurt, like, first half of the season last year. So I understand why, like, the Browns might be a little sensitive to it. And maybe, like, I think in this case, like, Kevin's probably, like, thinking to himself, like, I have to protect my guy. And I think he's probably well aware of the fact that if they put him out there or they create some level of, you know, doubt in order to maybe gain an edge and saying, like, well, if we at least create the perception that maybe he'll play, well, then that's going to be good to us from a, you know, just a gamesmanship standpoint. Like, the benefit of that versus, like what it'll create for Odell if you create the perception he could play and then he doesn't play. Which, you know, then it becomes like a toughness question and everything else.
Which happened last week.
And so, my guess is that would be what it is, right? Like, is that, like, you know, you kind of make the decision, we're not going to really put him out there until we know he's going to play the next Sunday because that's going to create an issue for him personally. That's the only thing I can think of because, a lot of times, like, the information getting out on injuries, whatever team you're talking about is pretty consistent because the coach and the players know they're going to get called on it if they're not consistent. And so the only reason why you would go the other way in a situation like this is to protect the player and to shield the player against any sort of criticism he might get.
Albert Burr with us from the MMQB. Going back to the game, Albert, on Sunday, obviously the Browns fall short just by a hair. You know, Baker has a chance late and throws the interception. Overall, what do you make of how the Browns played in that game against the Chiefs? They had the 12-point lead at halftime, had a 9-point lead with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and somehow they squander it.
Yeah, Dustin, I just think that this is what you're like. This is what you're dealing with. You play the Chiefs, and like people watch the Patriots for all of those years, and how frustrating it would be watching your team playing against the Patriots, where they can make mistakes late, and Brady can just erase them, you know, and like something can go wrong for them, and Brady could fix it. And that's what you're dealing with Mahomes and the Chiefs now, where like they can kind of roll out there and look half asleep for half the game and make 3 or 4 big plays in the end and make it all not matter. And I know it's frustrating, but I wouldn't read too much into a blown lead against that particular team. Now, if this happens again over the next couple of weeks, then maybe you can point back to this. But because it's against who it's against, and because Mahomes has such a like an ability to erase like anything good that you do or anything bad that they do in 5 or 10 minutes of game action, I don't think you'd read too much into it. Now, are there things the Browns could have done better? Absolutely. Like the punt situation, like I'm sure Kevin's telling all his guys, that sort of thing is inexcusable. Even letting Tyreek Hill get behind the defense in that situation, like make the tackle, find a way to get him to the ground, you know? So I certainly think there are things that they can clean up, but I don't think that we can look at this as like a problem of blowing a lead because of who it came against. And again, if it becomes a pattern later on, we're talking about something else. You would have liked to have seen Baker make some of those throws late, but, you know, because of where this game was, who it was against, I'm not, like, reading into this as if there's some sort of larger problem right now. We'll see a couple weeks from now if some of these things turn into more consistent issues.
Albert, more embarrassing performance this weekend, the Buckeyes against Oregon or former Buckeye coach Urban Meyer against the Texans?
That really hurts, man. Like, you go there. I come on here to talk some NFL, and you got to go there, huh, Adam? Really, really stinks.
Oh, that was painful. Have you, hey, Albert.
It was bad. I mean, look, here's the thing is, like, I still think we had better players than them, and I think that much is clear in that if you didn't, that's a 3 or 4 touchdown game. You know, I mean, I thought the Buckeyes got it clearly out-coached, out-schemed, out-flanked, however you want to put it, out-physicaled. And, like, by virtue of the fact that they've got 5-star athletes all over the place, they were able to climb back in the game and give themselves a shot. But, you know, I've heard that there are people in power there that are not happy, and everybody's heard about it this week. And I think there are going to be some changes because of it. And that's what's so interesting to me, if you want me to segue to the Jacksonville situation.
Yeah.
That's what's so interesting to me about Jacksonville is that I know what Urban would have done in that situation in college, right? And, like, in a lot of cases, like, he would go to, like, this deep, dark place. And I don't think you can do that as an NFL coach, you know? And
right.
So I think you've got to handle players a little bit differently. I think you've got to handle losses a little differently. And you know, we've talked about this in the past. I think it's a huge question with Urban coming in, and I think his program can work. I think the bones of his program are good and can be transported to the NFL. But, like, he didn't have to lose very often. He lost 9 times in 7 years at Ohio State. He lost 13 times in 6 years at Florida. Like, if they lose 9 games this year at Jacksonville, like, again, lost 9 games in 7 years at Ohio State. He loses 9 games in Jacksonville this year. That's a 7-game improvement over last year, you know? So
yeah.
I think it's going to be fascinating seeing how they come out of this. I think job number one for them, no question about it, they got to take some off of their rookie quarterback. I know nobody feels stronger that the guy's a generational talent than me. Like, I think the guy is different than the other 4 guys who went in the first round. I think he has a chance to be the best quarterback in the league someday. But you can't go out and have your rookie quarterback throwing 50 times in his first game. I don't care who the guy is. And so, you know, I think one thing Urban's got to do here, and I would hope he learned a lesson from it, is when you've got a rookie quarterback, you got to manage the game differently. And every part of the game, every part of the way you play the game has got to, like, flow into the fact that, you know, we're going to be looking for plays from our rookie quarterback, but we're not going to be looking for him to win the game all on his own. And, you know, I think all Urban has to do is look at the way his buddy Bill Belichick managed Mac Jones in New England over the weekend, and the way that, and I know they didn't win the game, but the running game, the defense, one of the reasons why Mac played so well is because he wasn't in a lot of bad situations. He wasn't facing a huge deficit. He wasn't in bad down and distance situations. And Trevor was constantly in those situations in Jacksonville. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he comes off of a loss and how he handles a loss. But just as important, I think, is going to be how the offense ties into the defense and how all of that stuff is built this week going into this game to support the rookie quarterback, because Urban's asked a lot of those guys, and he's got to find a way to give them results. And I guarantee you, giving the team results isn't going to come by virtue of putting a quarterback out there in his first or second start and having him throw the ball 50 times.
Albert, let's go back to Monday night, the Raiders and Ravens. And Ravens, of course, fall short to Las Vegas as Derek Carr throws the touchdown to Zay Jones in overtime. Yeah. Injuries on that Ravens team, I mean, are they starting to mount up to the point where we should be concerned? Not we, but people, Ravens fans should be concerned about that team in the season?
Yeah, Dustin, I think that program's pretty strong, and, you know, they've withstood injuries in the past. I think, like, you know, part of the issue now becomes, like, where their identity is, you know? And, like, I think a huge part of their identity, obviously, is their running game and, you know, how difficult they are to deal with in the running game. And, you know, when Lamar Jackson has an undrafted free agent standing next to him instead of J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards, that's going to affect the way that you defend Lamar Jackson. It's going to make it easier to defend Lamar Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think on defense, when the strength of your team's your secondary and you're able to be so creative up front because you can trust the guys in the back end, and then you pull Marcus Peters out of that, well, now you got Chris Westry, who's a young guy who they like, who they really like, but hasn't played a lot, and now all of a sudden the other team's throwing at him, you know? And so, like, that's sort of part of it to me, and I think I had sort of undersold this going into the year, is like their corners and their running backs are a major part of the identity of that team and everything that team's been able to be the last couple of years. And so I think so much of it's going to come down to just how they replace those guys. And, like, are you able to maintain those positions as a strength? And if you can't, can you adjust your identity on the fly? To me, it's like John Harbaugh is one of the best head coaches in the game, no question about it. But I think there's a big challenge ahead for how he manages all of that.
We're talking with Albert Breer, MMQB. Albert, I feel like every year people, not just fans I expected from, but even members of the media that cover the NFL, they overreact to week one, good and bad. Like, it's like you believed something for 6 months, and then you see one game and you change your opinion. I think that's crazy. Is that am I making something out of nothing? Or are you seeing a lot of that as well?
Yeah, in fact, I'm trying to work on a column for Friday on, like, what we actually can take from it. So
right. It's
funny you ask that, because that's actually, like, what I'm trying to figure out is what we can actually take from week one. I think one of the things that we can look at is, like, some overarching themes, right? So one of those themes is, like, the importance of an elite quarterback. And I think Mahomes and Brady showed that in week one, in that, like, both those teams are playing with a much bigger margin for error than most others, right? Like, I think that's fair to say. Like, you look at, like, the Bucs, and they turn the ball over a bunch. Chris Godwin dropped a long touchdown pass and then fumbled inside the 5-yard line. And Brady, like, basically erased all of that. Like, the Chiefs, like, just didn't look like themselves, got their asses kicked, got their defense just got walloped early in that game by the Browns. And Mahomes made it not matter in the end. So that's one key theme, I think, is that, like, the very elite quarterbacks, and there aren't very many of them, are so valuable, you know, and that's why everybody's chasing those teams. The other thing is, and I'd be interested to get your take on this, Dustin, because this is something that came up this afternoon. So one thing that, like, somebody said to me that I thought was really interesting was, as a result of the spring going sideways and less practice time being out there, one guy said to me he thought that the tackling was poor and defensive pressure was up as a result of all of that. And I thought that was interesting because both those things point to fundamentals, right?
Right,
like
absolutely.
Where blocking and tackling are fundamentals. And if those two things aren't happening, well, maybe that's a result of teams getting less practice time in the spring and the summer. And, you know, the point he made to me, which I thought was really interesting, is generally the offensive skill players are better athletes than the guys in the defensive back seven. And then the defensive linemen are better athletes than the offensive linemen. And so what you're seeing is a bunch of guys just out-athleting the other guys because fundamentals aren't where they need to be right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Albert. Obviously, tackling is something that you work on in the summertime and in training camp. But with the limited amount of practice time you had in the spring and summer, it's and one less preseason game as well, I'm not surprised to hear that. It's kind of fascinating you talk about the athletes on the defensive line. So you're basically getting pressure by the defensive front, and then you're not tackling anybody in the back end because you're lacking the fundamentals. It's interesting. I'm going to have to watch this week and see if I see a bunch of missed tackles because I wasn't looking for it in week one, but, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, man.
Yeah, and I think like even like in the Browns game, like there was a play where and look like the Chiefs are like we talked about last week. The Chiefs are in this spot where they got five new offensive linemen, so like I think they can be forgiven if there are some mishaps early in the year. Three rookies starting all of that, but there was a play there late. I think it was in the fourth quarter where Clowney and Garrett, and I think Garrett wound up with a sack, but it just looked like a jailbreak. You know what I mean? Like, and then you kind of rewind the play. And you're like, oh, like Joe Woods must have brought pressure. And he really didn't. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like that split second where there was some hesitation from the Chiefs line, and it turned into a track meet, you know? And so, like, I think that's one of the things that I think you can take from week one. When there's things that are happening across the league, that it's not so much like one team or another. Because I do think, like, there are things we're going to overreact to on individual teams. But there are certain themes that are happening across the league that are important. I think another one is like how important line play is. Like, you know, I think me as well as like I'm probably one of the a high percentage of people that thought the Bills were going to beat the Steelers. You know what the difference was in that game? The Steelers' offensive line whooped the Bills' offensive line, right? And T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt had their freaking way with Buffalo. You know. So that's the other thing is, like, I think Philly is another example of it, right? Like, Philly, really strong in the offensive and defensive lines. A lot of people thought they weren't going to be any good this year. Why? Well, because maybe they don't have the shiny things that other teams have. But, you know, I think it's a lesson, too, you take, which is, you know, if you're good on the offensive and defensive lines, you're probably going to be in every game.
No doubt. And, by the way, last thing real quick, Albert, to solidify your point on what you said about Brady and Mahomes – only did they do that, but it wasn't like they did it against the Texans and the Jaguars. They did it against two teams that we think are great offensive teams in the Browns and Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because, and this can be part of a longer conversation we can have down the line, but and I think it's going to apply to the Browns, and I'm sure I brought it up to you guys at some point over the last few months, but I think there's like this Mahomesization of the NFL going on right now where – like, I think the league's as stable as it's ever been at quarterback, and there aren't as many good quarterbacks as there's ever been in the NFL. But the difference now between having a good quarterback and a great quarterback, it feels like it's growing. And I think that's part of the reason why you see the Rams dump Jared Goff and go get Matthew Stafford, and why you see the Niners start to move off of Jimmy Garoppolo and trade up to get Trey Lance. It's like teams across the NFL are looking to raise their ceiling at the position. It's why, like, you know, you heard everything about Miami potentially moving on from Tua and going and getting Deshaun Watson. And so, like, I think that there are some teams across the NFL, and the Browns may be one of them, that like their quarterback but maybe don't love their quarterback because they're staring up at that mountain and they see Mahomes and Brady on top of it, and they say to themselves, are we ever going to be able to scale this mountain with the quarterback that we have? And, you know, like, again, like, so I think that's why you see – some teams moving off of what you would think are very stable quarterback situations. I mean, Garoppolo and Goff were in the freaking Super Bowl, guys.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, when did that happen before, right?
Yeah it's a great
like, point. When did it happen before the teams got to the Super Bowl with quarterbacks in their 20s and then moved on from them a couple years later?
Yeah.
Never.
It's a great point.
It's never happened before, right? Like, and so that's what's so interesting about all of this. It's going to be an interesting thing to follow this year, especially when you consider that at the end of this year, you could have Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and Deshaun Watson available by a trade. Mm.
It's going to be fascinating. Albert, great insight as always. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect
your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.